Hello and welcome to Gavin Scott Presents, a miscellany of musings, ideas and extracts that have delighted me from across the whole spectrum of English literature. Today's offering is Ozymandias by Percy Bysshe Shelley. Percy Shelley died at 30 in 1822, drowned while sailing his yacht off the coast of Italy. He'd worked steadily as a poet during much of his adult life, but it was pretty radical stuff, and most publishers and poetry journals were afraid to publish his work for fear of being arrested for blasphemy or sedition. But though in his day he was an underground poet, his influence grew steadily after he died. His ideas impacted on Britain's radical pro-democracy Chartist movement and also had a profound influence on Karl Marx. His writings on non-violent resistance influenced Leo Tolstoy, whose writings in turn influenced Mahatma Gandhi and through him Martin Luther King Jr. and the American Civil Rights Movement. Shelley was born in 1792, like Keats at the height of the French Revolution, in West Sussex, England, the eldest legitimate son of a Member of Parliament called Sir Timothy Shelley, and he spent a happy and contented childhood fishing and hunting in the surrounding countryside. Things began to go wrong for him in 1804, when he was 10 and was sent to Eton, where he was unmercifully bullied by older boys because he didn't care about sports and refused to take part in the system of fagging where younger boys became servants to their seniors. He got his revenge, stemming from his enthusiasm for science, by building an electric generator and wiring it to the door of his room so he could give people he didn't like an electric shock when they tried to come in. Before he left, as a parting gesture, he planted gunpowder under a tree on Eton's South Meadow and blew it out of the ground before heading off to Oxford. This was in 1810. And at Oxford, the legend is, he went to just one lecture, read for 16 hours a day, and published an atheistic novel called Zastrosi. He got away with this, but when, the next year, he published an atheistical pamphlet, he was sent down. Whereupon he eloped to Scotland with the 16-year-old girl called Harriet Westbrook, who went to the same boarding school as his sisters. His father, absolutely furious, immediately revoked Shelley's allowance, and Shelley himself, quickly bored with the marriage, began an intense platonic relationship with an unmarried 28-year-old schoolteacher. Shortly afterwards, he went to pay a call on the famous radical William Godwin, fell in love with his 16-year-old daughter, Mary Godwin, and threatened to commit suicide if she didn't return his affections. As soon as she did, he abandoned Harriet, now pregnant with their son, and ran away to Switzerland with Mary and her stepsister, Claire. The older Godwin daughter, Fanny, was left behind, heartbroken because she too had fallen in love with Shelley. It was in Switzerland, sometime later, that Shelley and Mary, through Claire, met Lord Byron, who was now living there. Shelley's conversations with the mad, bad and dangerous to know Byron had a stimulating effect on his poetry, and Mary, of course, famously wrote Frankenstein during the visit. When they got back to England, Mary's half-sister Fanny, heartbroken because Shelley had chosen Mary over her, went to Wales and committed suicide. And a month later, the body of Shelley's estranged wife, Harriet, was found drowned in the Serpentine. A mere 3 weeks after this, Shelley married Mary Godwin and went to live in Buckinghamshire, where he met John Keats. And it was in the Christmas of that year, 1816, that news arrived that a former French circus strongman, Giovanni Belzoni, who deserves a podcast all to himself, had succeeded in moving a giant statue of Rameses across the desert to the Nile. Whereupon Shelley sat down and wrote the immortal Ozymandias, which, despite what is in my view Shelley's appalling personal behaviour, is still one of my favourite poems. Here it is, Ozymandias, by Percy Bysshe Shelley. I met a traveller from an antique land who said, "Two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert, Near them, on the sand, half-sunk, a shattered visage lies, whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command tell that its sculptor well those passions read which yet survive stamped on these lifeless things, the hand that mocked them and the heart that fed. And on the pedestal these words appear: "My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair." Nothing beside remains. Round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away.